Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and we're going to revisit one of the most inspiring books ever written and a modern-day interpretation of it so that we can walk through it better. It's actually a walkthrough for Westerners of the Bhagavad Gita. So glad that we can talk about it again with the author of this walkthrough, and it's a fantastic walkthrough. I love it. I love reading it. So, Jack Hawley, thank you and welcome.
Hi, Peter. Thanks. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, I'm so glad we could talk more about this amazing opportunity to connect with deeper truths about how to hold life in more miraculous ways. And I know that you got into this because you needed to.
Yeah. Well, let me tell that story.
Sure.
Okay, well, it was, now more than 35 years ago. My wife and I had just, we were always sort of spiritually inclined and reading a lot and so forth. And this was really longer ago than that, maybe 50 years ago. And we lost our son, our eldest son, 4.5-year-old boy, the apple of our eye. It was a huge, of course, huge family catastrophe. So we had to start looking around in earnest for something that would work for us. And that meant really out of necessity, you know, in the midst of this catastrophe and the heavy sadness, we had to move toward really a deeper, very, very much deeper of spirituality, and the purpose of that was just to survive. It wasn't just to learn something new. It was to survive as people, as a couple, as parents of other kids too. So anyway, that was the background of it, and what that led to was some trips to India. Of course, you know, people who are deeply into spirituality sooner or later find themselves on those dusty roads in India. And we found ourselves living for half of each year for now it's about 34 years, a little bit more than 34 years, in an ashram in southern India, where I taught business organization behavior at a local university there that was attached to the ashram. But this is a place where they live the tenets of the Gita. Now, one of the early summers there, very hot, by the way, was we were going to go up on the sit on top of the mountain and be with divinity for that whole summer. So we smacked our lips at that, and we were on our way to this mountaintop across the plain, the Deccan Plateau in the middle section of India, toward the eastern Ghats, people who know India, toward the eastern mountain range. And it was hot, terribly hot. By hot, I mean 110, 115 degrees, the air not moving at all. And we were exhausted. We stopped at just before we got to the mountains, we stopped at a guest house, and we went in, and we were tired, thirsty, and I was also thirsty for something to read, really. I wanted to just focus my attention somewhere else, somewhere better. I looked over at the shelf, and there's only one book on this dusty old shelf in this not very high-class guest house. And I picked it up, and it was the Bhagavad Gita. So I opened it to just flip it open, and it flipped open to a page on in chapter 7, and I'm reaching over now for it. And let me read some parts of this so you'll get an idea of what happened with us. I flipped it open to page or to chapter 7, and we had read a little bit of the Gita before, but not much. Well, this time here we are on our way up the mountain, and I flipped it and I said, "Oh, here it is." And I started reading because it's so nice. I was reading to my wife, and this was quoting the Krishna, who was the God figure in the Gita, and he's talking to his disciple Arjuna. and he is trying to explain to him who he was. This, by the way, is early in it, and it's such a grabber for me at that time, so let me share it. Here's Krishna. He said, I am pure consciousness. And that's what grabbed me. I said, oh, Louise, let me, this is my wife's name, oh, Louise, let me read this to you. So we sat there, and I said, I read it. I am pure consciousness, the underlying essence of all elements and beings. Nothing whatsoever exists separate from me. I am the innate nature of everything. In pure water, I am the sweet taste. In the sun and the moon, I am the radiance. In the very center of human beings, I live as their virility and their courage. I am the sacred word Om, which is indicative of the divine, and I am the sound of Om heard throughout the universe. I am the slight, delicate scent, the sweet fragrance of the earth. This is Krishna continuing. He said, I am the brilliance in both the fire and the sun. I am the light of divinity in all beings. I am the subtle spirit in spiritual practices. For example, I am the love in the devotees. I am the austerity in the ascetics. I am the sweet sense of charity in givers.
And we can add to that, I am that I am.
that's what he gets to. And that's, and it goes on some further from that, but that gives a sense for what has happened with us in our over these 35 plus years now, and a little background story so we can take off from that in any direction that you think is fitting.
Well, I want to look at the book because it gets you there. It's so interesting, and as I said earlier, it's inspiring because there's so many times when we're lost on the wheel of life.
Oh.
And,
everybody.
Yeah. And we're caught in all of our problems and our fix-it mental states that we just have to we're the source of anything that can go right, and we have trouble doing it. And yet it's hard to stop. It's hard to get ourselves off that wheel and trust in this larger all-encompassing oneness that we are, that is a flow of patterns, of energy, that if we can trust it, if we can experience it, that largerness of us, then we can grow bigger than our problems and grow into this oneness. And it's hard to get there. So having a book like this that just reading it, and there's a lot of repetition in it for good reason, and it's not boring. It's just, it keeps on reminding you to hold that divinity, and that helps so much. And so I'm so grateful to have the Bhagavad Gita because it's a tool. It's not just knowledge. It's an experience.
I think that's the most important part of it, for at least for us. It's not just another bookload of information. It's a small book of the highest spiritual knowledge that's available. It's why are we here? Where do we go after we die? What happened? Why do these bad things happen? How can we work our way through it? One time in India, another thing happened. This was maybe halfway through my time in India. I'm sitting there on the veranda of this holy man's temple. And I'm about ready to lose another one of our family in the States. And I'm sitting there, and there's an illness in the family. And feeling such a sense of loss and so bleak and so hard, there were tears right behind my eyes. And for 3 days, my mind entered this state. And I got worse and worse, and I sort of like spiraling down deeper and deeper, as most people well know, into a really a deep, funky place, awful place. And the guru there, Satya Sai Baba, walked by, and he'd been watching this for 3 days, by the way, and he walked by me on that toward the end of the third day, and he leaned over and he whispered in my ear, he said, "Stop thinking." My first, as they walked past, my first reaction was puzzlement. Stop thinking? How can we stop thinking? And so, well, I'm going to try it. If he says it, there must be something in that. So I started saying a mantra. I tried several various things. None of them seemed to work until I would say, repeat my little mantra phrase in Sanskrit, and then just say, cleanse my mind inside of myself. So my way of stopping that thinking, of trying to do it, was to cleanse my mind. And as soon as I locked in on that little mantra, my mind did start cleansing. It started clearing up right away. So from that deep funk that I was in, ready to, you know, I was a mess, ready to burst out crying at any moment, I could feel my mind starting to shift. So this sort of crazy, puzzling kind of directive to stop thinking was exactly what I needed.
Right. There are times when thinking is doing us no good.
Oh, this, you know,
most of the time, maybe.
Spirituality is that on which we place our mind to grow stronger. So here I was, had my attention and my mind always into that negative losing of someone, that hard place. And when I shifted out of that, it was like shifting from one foot to another. My balance shifted, and my mental mind, my happiness shifted, and it opened up and came back into me.
Well, there is a mantra in the book. I'm not sure which one you're referring to, but there's one that's Om Tat Sat.
Oh, yes.
And
that's not the one I'm referring to, but that's another. It's another one of the gems in the book.
Yeah, and it's simple. When you said simple mantra, I said, oh, maybe you're talking about that one. And
okay.
I like the idea of it. Can you just explain that mantra?
Yeah. It's the Om Tat Sat is... And again, all of these things from this book, it's amazing. They're all 5,000-6,000 years old in writing. And before that, they're probably 10 or maybe even 20,000 years in oral tradition. But the Om Tat Sat is the way it's, the Sanskrit that comes through in English, is it really is a way of putting our attention immediately into our own divinity. And the practical translation, or the exact translation of it, is a little bit difficult, but it says, I am that, or that I am. And what it really means is, I am that divinity. And it just reminds us. So once you repeat it thousands of times, it starts taking hold. At first, just sounds so simplistic, but then it starts taking hold. I am that. And to remind ourselves that, to remind ourselves that we are ourselves divinity, brings power. Of course, power swoops back in.
And yet it's not our mind that, our mind might be part of divinity, but our mind thinks, it is divinity.
the movement into spirit and into divinity is through mind.
Well, yes, knowledge is really helpful.
Oh, and awareness. So I think of awareness as part of mind, not part of brain, necessarily, but part of mind.
Mindfulness.
Awareness, attention, consciousness, those are the things that bring us into this magic sphere of the divine.
Well, it gives us discernment, and that's so important. And this book is a lot about discernment. That's a lot of what Krishna is saying to Arjuna. Is having that discernment of that greater oneness and to always strive for that. And so our mind needs to talk to itself and say, okay, let's go for the higher vibration here.
That's when the big shift comes. When we say that, when we practice it and keep at it enough, then we... After a while, and it's a gradual shift, but we make that shift from worldly to spiritual, or from agitation and constant stresses and concerns of life into the ease and the easiness of spirituality, of deep divine self.
Well, there's one thing in here that is very important, and it, you talk about it more than once, but it's near the end, especially when Arjuna has to go into battle. And instead, he would rather just maybe sit and meditate. And Krishna says, no, you're designed for battle. You're designed to be a warrior, and you have to live your truth. You have to be your true self. And to me, that's so important, if because this is not about becoming a monk. It's not about living an ascetic life where all we do is think of divinity. It's not about that. It's about being true to who you're supposed to be in this life.
Oh, and the Gita, Bhagavad Gita, is very clear on that. And that's one of, I think it was really groundbreaking when these truths started coming clear. Is that he was saying, don't go into a cave. Don't move into some far-off land. Stay in the world. Do good things in the world. And at every moment, have your mind in this divine place. So, yes, live your life and do your work.
Even if it's a warrior in battle. And here's
right,
the God image of Krishna saying to a human, go kill people.
Yeah, I know. And that's, you know, a lot of people have, of course, have a big problem with that because they think that this is a book that tries to influence people toward battle, and it's not that at all. The battle is inside, and every one of us has that battle, and the battle might be for, well, moving away from anguish into an easier, less stressful life, moving away from being caught in the fear of life and stepping into the love of life.
Well, yet being true to your nature, and one of the things I work with is the human design system, which uses the planets and uses the time of birth and is able to work with the Chinese I Ching and with chakras to identify the mechanics of each person's personality to a T. And it's very concise, very articulate in details about how we each are supposed to be in this life that we're born into. We can't help but be that way.
Right.
And it's always 100% accurate. When I do readings for people, I'll talk for 2 hours in detail of their personality traits, and they're always 100% accurate. And what it does is it empowers people to be themselves so they don't have to question it. Here's the language that we can use to follow what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, to allow ourselves to be true to ourselves. When we have a language for it, then we don't have to spin our minds about it and fight it. We can just live it through and hold that divinity at the same time.
Very, very nice. Yeah. Really nice. And we've talked, I think, about also a sort of a follow-on book. This book, by the way, was, as you recall, was directed by my inner movement over there and falling in love with the Gita's teachings. But then there was a follow-on book called Roadmaps to Self-Realization, which does some of the same things. It's a series of worksheets, self-inquiry worksheets that a person can fill out and get a fix on where they are on the spiritual path.
or not.
Yeah, or that's right, or not. And
right.
Where to focus then their attention and their energies so that they either get back on track or further, you know, take some further steps.
Well,
absolutely.
Well, we're living in a complex world. I don't know how many worlds before us were not complex, but we're in a time of great hardship for so many people. And yet there is a glimmer of hope in terms of consciousness. We are evolving into...
Yes, I'm sure of that.
Yes.
And it seems so hard to say that, and people look at me a little bit funny when I say it. But if we look at the big chunks of time, you know, I think that we are more human and more aware now than we were during the Middle Ages.
And perhaps that's what helps us suffer more is to see what hasn't evolved.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, right. Okay, so if we shift our weight back and look at what we're not doing or what hasn't evolved too long, I mean, we can do that, and it's maybe worthwhile for a while, but if we shift too much toward that, then we just start going back, spiraling down into that funk again.
Well, there's a great truth in the Bhagavad Gita about desire, and that we can even be a very advanced soul and yet have too much desire for our advancement.
Yeah, how nicely put. Uh-huh.
Thank
That's
you.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so wherever we're at, even on this planet and our desire for a better planet, it can lower our frequency just to be in stress
okay.
about it.
Krishna was quite clear about that. He used the term golden rope, if you recall. And he said, look, even if you have, even if you're a very high being and you are close to divinity, if you desire it, then you're moving yourself backward.
Right.
So the one thing you can't desire is death. The only thing you can desire, by the way, is pureness, purity of divinity, of your own divinity. And that seems not to carry much of a karmic weight.
It's more of an inspiration than a desire.
Really more than information. I think I see so many people now overloading themselves with information about various spiritual tactics and strategies and so forth,
right?
Rather than looking at moving themselves along the spiritual continuum personally. Is it like they become a library, or they become a chuck full of spiritual information? But they're still caught.
They're not practicing.
Yep. Okay, thank you. Not practicing.
And that's what the Gita is all about.
It all about that.
Yeah. It's great. It's a small book. It's not like the size of the Mahabharata.
Right, that's right. It's a little tiny piece in the middle of the Mahabharata.
Right. And so this is an opportunity to be inspired in ways that keep reminding you to let go. Actually, it's to let go and allow this higher sense to pervade everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it doesn't take so much desire. It takes more surrender than desire.
Wonderful. And each one of those let goes is a little tiny surrender.
Right.
And the more we surrender, the more we, going back to that story, the more we stop
yes.
our thinking.
Right.
And surrender that mind space over to this goodness, the better we'll be. And the more practically we will be able to live life or cope with it.
Yeah, we can only change so much anyway.
Okay, thank you. And the rest of it is acceptance, too.
Right, exactly. I mean, we can't force life. We have to use energy, and there are those three gunas, and it's good to know about them, because the highest one is sattvic, which is being calm and harmonized, and yet that can have too much desire attached to it as well.
That's where the golden rope is. Yeah.
And then the rajasic is where most people are, which is restless energy. And that's where desire is. And
that's where our energy comes from, and where our action comes from.
Right.
So without that rajasicness, we wouldn't really be fully practicing human beings.
Right. We need it.
Yeah, we need it. We need it if for nothing else but to move upward toward that sattvic, toward that realm of quietness and an achievement of spiritual kind of knowledge or a wisdom,
right.
Not knowledge. And I think I use wisdom a little bit differently. Wisdom
right.
is the application of. Wisdom is living by. Knowledge is just knowing.
Right. Knowledge is more the rajasic.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So the sattvic is that higher. And then the lowest is tamasic, which is lethargic and unmotivated. And so it's important to just use that as a scale. And
so, you know, something else, too, though, that tamasic is, and rajasic, if you combine them, let's say if you're a rajotamasic person, if you combine those two lower qualities, then we get, that's where we get in trouble, and that's where we get the earth in trouble. Oh, well, let's just use everything in the earth for our own benefit and our own good. And not only that, but let's get very, very good at it. Let's burn down all those jungles and all those trees. Let's not worry about the climate that's changing around us every minute and so forth. And Krishna, by the way, was very, very clear about that in the Gita. He said, if we leave ourselves too much to our own devices, then our greed moves in and we will destroy the earth.
And that's a lot of what's happening. We are in the act of destroying the earth. We don't know where we're at in that. We're pretty far along right now.
It seems so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems not only to us, but to 98% of people who really look at it from a scientific standpoint.
And those aren't the people in power.
I know, huh?
Right. So we can't, and yet worrying about it is also a hardship that is less than divine.
And, isn't that interesting? Right.
Yeah. And so
another piece of that puzzle.
Yeah, exactly. How do we position ourselves in regard to this potential disaster that we're moving towards?
And then we get into a major strategy, and the major strategy is really to operate on yourself. To operate only on external things like changing society and so forth. And that's what I taught, by the way, for years, both in India and here, changing organization and culture and such. But the focus is not only that, because that can eat you up, but changing your inner culture, changing, you know, again, shifting from that one foot to the other, so that you're more in balance, so that you're happier. One of the ways of looking at the Bhagavad Gita is that it teaches us to, well, we learn from it this, that we can walk through a world of cruelty or walk through a world that's failing and see nothing but love.
And so let's be contagious of that. your book, The Bhagavad Gita, A Walkthrough for Westerners, is certainly a book that is contagious in itself. And I love reading it. I love referring to it. It's a great reminder to have. And I think people should run out and get a copy. And I'm speaking with the author, Jack Hawley, H-A-W-L-E-Y. Jack, thanks so much. It's so great to talk with you.
Oh, and by the way, they can also download several freebies from my website.
Go ahead.
GitaWalkthrough.com.
GitaWalkthrough.com. That's great.
If they want to get into it, that's a nice place to enter it.
Terrific. And it's so wonderful. It's inspiring to work with you and talk with you and enjoy discussing such a great book of that's come down through history. And
I'm delighted to do that, Peter.
And thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
My pleasure.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I can be reached at Peter at Heart River, H-E-A-R-T, river.org, or 212-222-7748. And thank you so much for listening.